And this is the problem. You need a catalog that gives you really good coverage of your existing technologies and which can expand with you and add new technologies, because you know you're going to be using something new in 1 or 2 years' time. And you don't want a situation where you say, well, we can't adopt this new technology because we can't fit it into our catalog.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, founder CEO of Bark, and my guest today is again Donald Farmer. Donald is an analyst, an old friend, a contributor to Bark events and Bark content. And with that, it's always a pleasure to talk to him because he often takes a very interesting and strategic view on many aspects around data analytics and AI. And today we start with an observation that most data catalogs are managing data. So the data assets, maybe the access to it, where it is, what's in it, which is super important, obviously, and a cornerstone of any governance in an organization. But Donald makes the point that we also have to govern the usage of the data. So we need to understand who is doing what with the data, what reports are available, what metrics have been maybe calculated out of the raw data we have in the data catalog, and so on and so on. And I think he makes a very good point. And we learn a lot around why it's important, but also how this is implemented, what tools are available, and how we can broaden and complement the existing data and AI governance ideas and tools and concepts with the idea of an analytics catalog. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Donald.
Hi there. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again. And thanks for being on my podcast again.
Oh, great.
We chose a very interesting topic. There's a statement from you that you said companies should think about governance beyond the data catalog. So you're basically alluding that there's more than the usual data governance to do. Tell me more about that.
Yes. I mean, I could put it even more controversially and say that data governance just isn't good enough anymore. It's not enough for companies to be doing that. And what I mean is, I can give you a very familiar example, something you know very well. If you go onto a new website, the cookie screen comes up and you get to, you know, how can I share my data? And they always want you to share your data with them. And you get to share your data, perhaps for performance improvement, perhaps give your permission for sales and marketing. Most people uncheck that. And give your permission for data for account management, for example. And you can check some of those boxes and not check others. Now, the data is the same. The data is collected the same way. It goes into the catalog and it's administered. But it's how you use the data that actually matters. So the same person could have permission to use the data for performance improvement, but not have permission to use the data for sales and marketing. The data catalog doesn't know about that. It's just governing the data. So we need to find some way of governing the usage of the data, so we know what's happening beyond the data catalog. Once I've got my hands on the data and I've got it, what do I do with it? And it turns out that legally, in compliance, in both Europe and in the USA, in many jurisdictions, that's what really matters. It's one thing to govern the data. That's very important. But you also have to govern the usage of the data. And actually, that's perhaps where your greatest liability may be.
Right. I see a lot of organizations right now thinking about extending their governance approaches from data governance to AI governance and thinking about how can I integrate that. But if I understood you correctly, your idea is even broader. So it's not only the AI usage, but basically any usage of data, isn't it?
It is, yes. And I think in addition to data governance and AI governance, the third area which would be very relevant for us would be analytics governance, which is somewhat different from AI governance. AI governance, of course, is very concerned with governing the models and making sure that there isn't, for example, bias in the models, or also making sure that models are retrained appropriately, all that sort of thing. Analytics governance is making sure that the analytic use of the data is approved, so that when we're building a dashboard or a predictive analytics model, or even just a report, that we're actually governing that properly. And good examples of that would be there may be data in a data source, which could be personal identifiable information that shouldn't appear in the analytics because the analytics are going to be shared more broadly, say with the entire sales team or with more broadly in the organization. So we have to think about how do we govern the use of the analytics as well. So I think those three areas, data governance, analytics governance, and AI governance actually go together in this picture.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that makes sense.
I'm glad.
Absolutely. I think the next obvious question would be, but how do I do that now? So how can I make sure that I actually capture the data, but then I don't only want to capture it, I also need to make use of it.
Right, exactly. So there are some limits to what you can do, of course. To a certain extent, you can't stop people doing things. And the obvious example of that is, people get their data in Excel and they export to Excel and they can do anything with it. And, how do you govern that? That becomes, if you like, a matter of discipline and for the employees, as opposed to a matter of any technical control you can do on it. By the way, that's why my colleague Anthony Dayton used to say that every time someone exports to Excel, an angel loses its wings. At that point, you've lost control, of the data. So how would you prevent that happening? Technically, it's difficult. So the better way is to provide people with excellent tools so they don't need to go outside the system. And as somebody who has worked for many years in self-service analytics, working on Power Pivot, Power BI, Click, and so on, I'm very conscious of this, that in some ways we contributed to the problem by making self-service so easy. But still, a very critical part of this is that the self-service artifacts, the products that you produce, the dashboards, the reports, the visualizations, ultimately, when you want to share these or when you want to create them within an enterprise system, they will be typically on a server. Nowadays, they'll probably be on the cloud, and therefore they can be governed. You can see what those applications are doing. You can read their metadata, understand where the data came from, so you can track them back through data lineage to the data governance, and you can understand what people are doing with it. So, for example, you can see that this report is being used by the marketing team, but it contains data which the marketing team should not be looking at. Or you can see that this visualization is absolutely fine for the product management team who are looking at, for example, latency on the website and trying to do website performance improvement. But it turns out that it's being shared with people and is perhaps being shared with people, again, in sales and marketing who shouldn't have access to that information. So in a sense, what you can do is... although you can't have perfect governance, just in the same way as you can't have perfect data governance, you can look at the artifacts, these objects that we're creating, and look at who's using them, what data they're connected to. And to a certain extent, you can also look at the metadata of reports and say, is this a marketing report? Is this a sales report? Is it a performance report? Is it a financial report? That sort of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If I now in an organization want to set that up, what would be the steps to do it? What's your recommendation? How can I get to it?
There's a few ways in which you can do this. Probably the simplest way, the easiest way to start, if you like, is by looking at where your reporting systems and analytic systems are already saving these objects. And that may well be on a portal or in a interface that you have. Some of these are better than others. Some products have really good portals where they gather together and people can publish their artifacts. I think of others where people often share things with SharePoint, and that's not so good because it's really difficult to get into the metadata of the objects at that point. But I think if you've got a portal that comes with your analytics product, that's probably quite good. However, that's okay for one analytics product. If you have multiple products, and in an enterprise you will, for many reasons, people have their own products that they have selected. So for self-service, different departments may have different analytic tools. Data scientists may have different analytic tools from business intelligence teams, and companies which grow by acquisition often have different tools that have been built up over time. In that case, you need a different solution which can bring together the artifacts, no matter which tool they were created in, into a, sometimes call it a single pane of glass, somewhere where you can see all the artifacts together, no matter where they were created. And so we now start seeing analytics catalogs evolve in the same way as we saw data catalogs for managing data governance. We can see analytics catalogs evolving. And analytics catalogs allow you to go in and create a register of all the artifacts that are there. And then they should be able to do things like, you know, consider where the data came from and look at who's using them. That social usage is actually very important. Who's actually using these artifacts becomes a really important part of governance. And then there's other things you can do with that information as well. But that's the primary way to do it. Either you look at a portal for a single tool, or you start to build an analytics catalog across the multiple tools that you may have.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. Now there's a topic that's, I think, pretty hotly discussed, that's semantic layers. So we used to have them, I think, in some of the oldest BI tools, there were already semantic layers. Just think about business objects. But this seems to be very hip again. I think always, or sometimes in conjunction with an AI discussion. But maybe you can bring that into perspective for us. Yeah. So we have now data catalogs as a tool, yeah, as one of the data governance tools. We have sometimes additional tools like data access management, or sometimes policies that are managed in a way and sometimes enforced. Then we have sometimes separate data lineage tools. That's the topic. And now there are vendors coming up saying, okay, we do a semantic layer, just a semantic layer. And now, and then you say, okay, but analytics catalog would also be maybe interesting. So how does that all fit together? Is that complementary, overlapping, or what would the landscape look like maybe?
Yeah, there's a lot of overlap, and there's a lot of complexity in the landscape. And the complexity is mostly there because there's no one solution to any of these problems. And because of the way in which enterprises grow, often by acquisition, and often by different departments having some independence, which is a good thing because the departments can then choose what's best for them, it can be rather difficult to ensure that there's a consistent landscape. So you end up with a variety of tools. And it'd be a great thing if we could all say, you know, just use this one ERP system and just use this one reporting system, but the world is more complex than that. So for example, the data lineage tools exist because it's one thing to have a data catalog, but data scientists may be using data directly. Data pipelines may be sourcing data without going through the data catalog. And because data pipelines today may actually be very dynamic, especially with AI, they may be created dynamically, configured dynamically. You need a tool which is as dynamic as your data pipeline architecture. The semantic layer, though, is very interesting. And you're right, it does go back, you know, a long time. It was one of the first ways in which people thought of solving the problem of the single version of the truth. Let's create a kind of semantic model of the business. And the purpose of the semantic model, and therefore the semantic layer nowadays, isn't just to give you access to data, but to give you access to the business meaning of the data. It's one thing to be able to connect to a number of fields, say in a table of invoices. It's quite another thing to be able to understand how they relate to each other and what the different fields mean and how you might use them. And the semantic layer gives you that. And it gives you that across the entire enterprise because it's virtual. It's not really an object. It doesn't have the data in the semantic layer. The semantic layer is a way of connecting to the data. So it's similar to what we did previously. It's also similar to some of the distributed and virtual architectures that have existed in the past. Nowadays, somewhat different because the architecture and the languages that we use to express semantic layers. There's now an open semantic layer language, for example, that the aim is to, and I think it was Snowflake who introduced that, but the idea is that it would be open so that all semantic layers could share a common language. And previously, we'd had various attempts to create ways of metadata talking to each other. But the semantic layer purpose is always to sit above the data and provide a sort of business description of it that could be used. So business users and designers and developers and architects can speak to the business purpose of the data, in a sense, without looking at the underlying complexity of how that data is stored. And now you have the question of, how do you manage a semantic layer? And of course, the vision would be that there's an enterprise semantic layer that presents this model for the entire business. And that's a vision, but the reality is we end up with multiple semantic layers for all the traditional reasons of complexity, that there are different teams and different companies and different subdivisions doing their own thing. So it does provide a potential solution. It starts to look really interesting. But then again, you still have to solve the problem of, okay, but what are people doing with that semantic layer? They're using it, but are they using it in ways that they are permitted to do? So policy management does come into this, and the ability to apply policies is, I think, very important. And very often, again, we've thought of policies as being closely related to data access. But actually, policy should also cover the usage of data, how you can build it, and how you can share it, who you can share objects with, I think is a very important part of policy. So I could imagine a policy saying that, you know, if you're in the marketing team and you have a self-service business intelligence tool and you have a semantic layer, then you have permission to build objects over that, but you don't have permission to share them outside of your own team. And that would make perfect sense as a policy and would give you a sort of level of governance over that.
Yeah, interesting. When you describe that, I immediately had to think about data contracts, which bring a lot of these governance aspects together and are also, at least the ones I know, some of them also have definitely usage aspects already included. Yeah, because it's more this contract that not only the product owner or producer, the data producer, is not only basically has obligations, but the user, the consumer, also has obligations. For example, they have to agree on how to use personal information data. And so I see a bit of similarity for data contracts. Do you see the same?
I do, yes. And I see data contracts being fairly successful. In one area where I've seen them being very successful is where the users of the data can be very clearly defined. Where, for example, people working in a specific department can have a very clear contract. That works very well. Where it starts to break down, and this isn't really a problem with the concept of data contracts, it's just, again, one of the problems of messy reality, is that in a lot of businesses, there are analysts who are, and we often think of data analysts in our world. We talk about, you know, people who are primarily analyzing data for business purposes. But there's also a job role called the business analyst, whose job is to analyze business processes and to make business processes right. And they often work across departments in multiple ways, and they're very deliberately going across organizational boundaries. And I find that data contracts, they help in that situation, but they still struggle with the... they can become very complex, I think, is actually the problem. It's not that the data contract conceptually can't handle it, but a data contract which becomes very complex is a bit like any contract which becomes very complex. I mean, how often do we read all the details of a contract? The more complex it becomes, the more difficult it is to be compliant with it. So data contracts work in simple scenarios, in scenarios where they can be clearly defined and clearly understood. And I think they're very, very good for that. Messy reality becomes, you know, a little bit more complex. And I think the situation, by the way, is getting even more complex, just to make this situation worse, when we start thinking about agentic AI. And a lot of what we're talking about is the management of usage of data by human beings. But what about the management of the usage of data by AI agents? Especially when those AI agents can communicate with each other and enroll other agents in multi-agent processes. Well, now you've got another layer of complexity there again, and another scenario which we have to think about how we're going to manage governance in a multi-agent scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just emerging. You already talked about it at one of our events, so that was super interesting. And I think a lot of organizations are thinking right now about it when they start to build now agents and connect them and see what also comes up in these discussions is typically this idea of context. Yeah? So that context is important, that we need more context so agents can work better and understand more of the world around them. And wouldn't it be the case then that these analytics catalogs are also a good source for context then also in an agentic AI environment?
Yes, an analytics catalog should absolutely be very rich in context in order to be useful. And context has there's a particular problem with context that has been I've been working on for a few years now. If you think of an order processing system, and I think that's a very simple example where you have invoices and you have dispatch notes, you have delivery notes, and you have orders and you have reminders about invoices, and there's a whole range of documents and objects which would be there, and all of these create a workflow. You know, the workflow from the initial sales contact through to the order, through to the creation of the product, the packaging, and the dispatch, and the delivery, and the invoicing, and the payment. And there's an entire workflow there, which is very, very rich. And in your ordering processing system, or in your ERP system in particular, that will all be captured and it all works together. Now, when we then extract data to build, say, a data warehouse, especially a traditional data warehouse, we extract that data, we lose all that context. It all becomes into atomic tables, which then have to be related back to each other in a different way. So we then construct a star schema or something, which is an attempt to recreate the context that was already there within the ERP system. So we strip out all the context, and then we try and build it all again in order to give a rich business intelligence environment. And this is why, you know, we spend so long in our project, spending, it's 80% of our time, you know, doing data preparation and modeling rather than actually building the analytics, because we have to recreate all this context again. So context is really important. And it becomes even more important when we're talking about AI, because AI will work best with this richly contextualized data. So I think if we can, you know, create this context, perhaps in the data catalog, but especially in the analytics catalog, because we have to go across all the different tools, not just the data tools, but all the different tools that might be using it, then I think we can create something which is much richer, more complete, both for human analysts and for AI processes. But the great danger is that we lose context when we recreate it. That's expensive. Takes a lot of work, but it's also, we can get it wrong. The context may not be exactly the same as it was in the original systems. And I think this is another area where semantic layers can also help. That's the semantic layer could capture that context, enrich it, give a lot of metadata around it without extracting the data from the source system, and therefore without losing that relationship of the data to its context. So I think it's a critical issue. And honestly, I think AI, like a lot of things, is making this more interesting. Let's say more interesting, more complex, more difficult, more challenging, but more interesting as well. This is really, really making context. And of course, in AI, we talk about context engineering, but I also think, which is a very technical, specific form of engineering, but I actually think we need to think about context in this broader business sense as well, if we're going to get the best out of AI.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's imagine now, you sold me the concept anyways, just not that you sell it, but I got it. I bought it. I want to do it. What would you recommend? Or what would be, first of all, the prerequisites that I need to actually be able to build an analytics catalog? And then what's your recommendation? Yeah, what else do I have to do maybe upfront before I can implement one? What's important when I want to implement one?
Right. So, of course, there are analytics catalogs vendors who you can approach and look at their products. And to a certain extent, you can create your own analytics catalogs as well, though they may be simpler, they may have less functionality than you would get from a vendor. The most important thing is to ensure that you get as much coverage as possible of your analytic objects in the catalog. So, for example, if you were to, and this is a big difference between, say, a portal and a catalog. If I go to a business intelligence vendor, they will almost certainly have a portal, and that might be quite useful. And it may enable you to take all the objects from that vendor, all the reports, all the visualizations that they have created, that's been created with their software, and enable you to do a lot of rich management and governance with them. But that doesn't include the other objects, and therefore your coverage isn't complete. And I remember very well, and I'm going to go back a long time here, but almost 30 years ago, and I saw an amazing project at a company in the US, a credit company in the US, a credit card company. And they had built a data warehouse in those days, which covered a great deal of their business. And they had a metadata catalog, which covered a great deal of their business. It was very powerful and very useful. And then along came a new product, the new product on the market. And this one was called Gnosis, which became ProClarity, long since gone. Everybody was very excited by this new product, and all the business managers wanted to use it. The only problem was it didn't work with the metadata catalog. We couldn't get the metadata out of this into the metadata catalog. And that turned out to be a big project. So this meant that for about 6 months, the metadata catalog that they had, which was their equivalent of an analytics catalog, simply didn't cover the most exciting tool that they were using specifically to give them an advantage, because they thought this was the breakthrough tool they wanted to use. So the catalog, in effect, covered all the boring stuff and not the new stuff that they wanted to do. So in fact, it very quickly became almost useless to them, or at least nobody was interested in it. And this is the problem. You need a catalog that gives you really good coverage of your existing technologies and which can expand with you and add new technologies, because you know you're going to be using something new in 1 or 2 years' time. And you don't want a situation where you say, well, we can't adopt this new technology because we can't fit it into our catalog. So the catalog has to be adaptive and has to be able to, you know, embrace all the technologies you have today, all the significant ones that you're using, all the mission-critical ones, and be adaptive for the future as well. And having done that, then you start to build your baseline. You start to look at the most important visualizations, reports, catalogs that you need to that you need to bring into the registry. And once you've done that, you'll build the connections between them and start looking at the usage of them, especially the social usage, by which I mean who is using them and who is sharing them. And if you've got that, if you've got good coverage of your existing objects, you've found the most important reports and analyses that are being used, and you find the people who are using them, that's really a great start to your analytics cataloging.
Yeah, interesting. In data catalogs, or overall in data governance, we see more and more automation driven by AI. Do you see the same in analytics catalogs?
I do, yeah. Automation is, especially AI as a way of categorizing, is really good, and automatically adding metadata. AI, especially generative AI, can actually do a really good job of tagging systems and looking at data which otherwise a human being would need to go through and manually tag, and the AI can make a first pass at that and can very often do an excellent job of tagging, so that the data and metadata and analytics objects can all be searched very effectively. And search, of course, then becomes very important, because one of the use cases for an analytics catalog is, if I want to create, let's say, I'm creating a new marketing campaign, and I want to look at the previous marketing campaigns for similar products, I want to be able to search for all the reports and all the analyses of that. So search is actually a really important feature. I don't want to recreate something that somebody else has already done. I don't want to learn from objects which have already been created and which exist. And so I need to be able to do this kind of very rich search. And AI is great at enabling the tagging, which can drive that search, and also to a certain extent, being part of the search process as well.
Yeah, interesting. Donald, I think, thank you. That was very comprehensive overview, and I think an interesting point to make in the overall governance discussion. Anything we missed? Anything else you would like to add, since this podcast is coming to an end, this episode?
Actually, there is. Yeah, there is one thing we didn't mention. And in a sense, it's not got to do with governance, but it has. It's a side topic, if you like, but very related to governance, which is, I said that you scan, you find your most important reports, you find, you know, your data sources, and you build a catalog of your most important artifacts and the people who are using them. In that process, you will also find a lot of very unimportant reports, very unimportant artifacts, a lot of reports which are never being used, never being touched, and which are probably still being refreshed on the cloud, and you're actually paying to host them and paying to refresh them. And so actually your analytics catalog can become a really, really powerful tool for managing your spend, because you can discover what people are really using and what's actually out there. And a number of times, you know, companies have thousands, if not tens of thousands, of redundant reports which have been built at one time and never used, but they've been deployed and are being refreshed. And so as a side note, but it's actually related to governance, because, of course, there could also be governance and compliance risks in some of these objects. So you do want to know about them. but you can also save yourself a lot of money. So that's a secondary advantage, if you like.
Yeah, and very relevant, I would say, because we see that cost is very high on the agenda right now. Yeah, as something that bothers people or that's important when they make technology decisions. So I think that was a good point to make, Donald.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Donald, for introducing the analytics catalogs to us. I think it was a very interesting content. I think a lot of good ideas that people can pick up and use now. And with that, I say thank you, all the best to you, and I'm sure I will see and we will hear you again pretty soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.